This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Independent journalist Anastasia Carrier was born and raised in Yoshkar Ala, in what she says is a poorer province in western Russia. She spent the last few years in the U.S. working as a reporter and actively wrenching herself away from the propaganda she'd imbibed all her life about Russia's unequaled prominence, probity, and purity that she took on as articles of faith and fact. For most of her childhood, though, news and politics were just faint voices in the background from adult conversations overheard or brief flickers on her grandma's TV tuned to the evening news. Her grandma, a professor of German, was an avid news consumer.
She was a very easygoing, cheerful person who loved Soviet Union.
In 1999, Carrier's grandma finally found a new leader in which to instill her trust. Carrier was still in kindergarten then, but she remembers the catastrophe that rocked her world. In September of 99, over 300 people died in three separate bombings of apartment buildings. Carrier avoided tall apartment buildings on the way to school for weeks afterwards in fear. That was when Putin, then director of the KGB, spoke out to the people.
This confident and young person who said that he's going to hold Chechen people accountable.
In 2000, riding a wave of popularity after the bombings, Putin ran for president, much to the delight of Carrier's family. On election day, she and her grandma stood in line outside the voting booths a few blocks from their home.
And then she took me in the booth with a curtain, and she lifted me up and showed me where to mark for Putin. I was so excited.
So were the Chechens ultimately to blame for those apartment bombings?
Later I learned that there is a group of historians and journalists who blame Putin directly or indirectly for orchestrating those bombings.
Is there proof of that?
Yes, they caught some of the KGB agents, I think, delivering the bombs in the buildings. And Putin, around this time, was the director of KGB, or he just stepped down. I remember this is what Litvinenko was working on when he was poisoned.
Ah, Litvinenko, who was poisoned by people associated with Putin.
Yes, and another reporter.
Anna Politkovskaya?
Yes, she was also working on that.
And she was killed as well.
Right.
Now let's jump ahead to 2011, 2012, when you changed high schools.
I had teachers who were more encouraging of real critical thinking. We would talk about different kind of governments, economic issues, history. The topic of the Soviet Union and Stalin's repressions came up, and she spoke about the repressions that left millions of Russians dead. And this was new to me.
You said that the moral clarity felt alien.
It really did. But at the same time, my family became interested in so-called alternative history.
Alternative history as determined by Putin.
Yes. One of the big ideas is that Stalin is this misunderstood genius who saved Russia, and the people who died is just necessary sacrifice. And probably because of the teacher who pushed back in such a casual way, I never really became interested in this alternative history.
In 2014, Russia invaded and subsequently annexed Crimea. And that's when you became staunchly pro-Putin.
The coverage in Russia was that the new Ukrainian government was Nazi government, and anything Nazi-connected is a very sensitive topic for Russians, because victory in the Second World War is the huge point of pride. So the idea of Nazis is triggering in any shape or form. This was my sense of what was happening when I came to the US for the first time for half a year as an exchange student. So I was removed from Russian propaganda, and I got to see the snippets of the Western coverage of what's happening. And I remember feeling that this was bizarre and wrong. Then I went back to Russia. This was after Putin actually annexed Crimea. And this was where it became more of an issue for me. I started to feel like this is such an important thing that Russians done. We saved brothers and sisters from Nazi regime. We helped them to get back to Russia that they allegedly missed. So I become more pro-Putin. But I also realized that the West is really unhappy with this. So the stakes are higher to have a strong leader. That is Putin.
How was the West presented, and the US in particular, when you were back in Russia?
The West couldn't stand the idea that Russia was so big and so strong, and that the sanctions that was happening, it was just the US couldn't bear the idea of Russia doing good around the world.
It's 2016, you moved to the US to attend university in West Virginia, and for a whole year, you were in contention with a lot of your classmates.
Yes, I moved to the US for a second bachelor's degree, and I became more outspoken politically in journalism class conversations. Whenever I felt like somebody was saying something wrong, I would insert my so-called fact check. But I don't think anyone around me was particularly invested on trying to get me see the reality. There was definitely a lot of, I'm going to let you finish this statement and we're going to move on from this topic.
Did you feel patronized?
No, I didn't. If anything, I felt a little more special for having this opposite point of view to the popular narrative. I had the truth. Sounds a lot like people who believe conspiracy theories. I realize it now.
Did you write anything?
Yes, when the conversation about Russians hacking the election started, I strongly did not believe it. And I was trying to find a proof that this didn't happen. And I did find a piece that said that it's nearly impossible to hack the certain kind of voting machines at the moment. So I was pretty set on this. And at the same time, we had an opinion writing class. And I wrote about the US and the Western media treating Russia unfairly and misunderstanding all the great things we do in the world. And annexing Crimea, to my shame, made appearance in this piece. And I used this photo I found online of allegedly building in Crimea, showing a lot of Russian flags from the windows as a proof that Ukrainians really wanted to join Russia.
You brought your piece to the editor at the local paper, right?
Yes, and he and the other editor pushed back, and they pushed back, and I edit and edit and edit until it becomes a different piece. Because when I tried to fact check all the anecdotes I used in the story, I couldn't really find the sources, and I couldn't really understand where some of these facts even appeared from. But I still stood pro-Putin, and I still felt that the West somehow misinterprets Russia, and I couldn't figure out where the media went wrong, because as a journalist, I was trained to fact-check, to collect information and evidence. But then there was the coverage of Russia, which I didn't agree with, and I really couldn't understand at what point of the news organization somebody would give an order to start lying. And I started to sense that it was possible that no one really gave this order.
So this process of unraveling your own beliefs, and, you know, our beliefs are part of us, you experienced an acute sense of political homelessness.
Yes. I think that me being proud of being Russian became one of the cornerstones of my identity. I didn't realize how big it was for me until it was pulled out from under me. And I didn't really realize who I was or what was true about the world for some time afterwards. It took a long time and a lot of work to just educate myself enough on history and the current affairs to start to form an opinion.
You told our producer that you couldn't really accept that one thing is false and that everything else is true, that it's not how the world works. What did you mean?
When I was trying to make sense of what happened to me, all the lies were connected to each other. I would accept that this was a lie, and then that would pull two more lies from the past that I learned. And the best way to sort through this was just to stop believing everything. Everything I was raised with was a lie. It is truly fascinating looking back of how many small things that I thought were common knowledge were based on some kind of misinformation, propaganda, something very small that added up to something toxic in the end. The biggest part of it is that I believe that Russia could do nothing wrong, that Russia was the power for good. And I had evidence that proved that Russia wasn't the power for good. And that cast a long shadow of doubt on everything else I ever knew about Russia. And the more I started to learn about the Russian history, the more I started to realize that there were a lot of half-truths that I was taught in school, especially about the darker times of the Soviet Union.
Tell me about how you learned that stuff.
Yes, I had a wonderful teacher. She was my politics professor, Sally, and I took her international relations class, and I showed up at her office almost every day. She would recommend me books, and she was really a key person in helping me pull through this very dark and lonely time of not knowing what was true.
So 6 months ago, Russia invaded Ukraine. Things shifted again. Did this have an impact on your own ideological shift?
Before the war in Ukraine, these disagreements with my parents, this realization that they are under influence of propaganda was just something that inconvenienced my ability to be honest and really talk about what was happening or what I believed. There was this conversation I recently had with my parents, and I don't remember what exactly I was saying, but at this point, I'm already writing about the war in Ukraine for Politico magazine, and I already interviewed refugees from Ukraine. And there was this one woman who told me about her neighbor being shot by Russians for nothing, about the starvation of people who sit in the basements, about the car wrecks, and you can see that these cars were shot. So I have all this information as a journalist. I collected and fact-checked, and I'm trying every now and then to bring it up to my parents, and I'm not credible enough. Just because I'm in the US, I think my parents pity me for being brainwashed. I brought up this information I collected, and my dad asked me not to bullshit him. And it sounds like a small thing, but the only time my dad raised his voice in me in such a way, it was when I cursed at him as a five-year-old kid to make him stop tickling me. So this was huge. This was a big moment.
Yeah, as if you're cursing at him again by bringing up these things.
He got very defensive. Their beliefs just don't really make sense in the context of their character. They were supposed to be spared because, again, they are educated. And there are so many Russians who do not have the same level of education. They do not have the same financial safety. They didn't travel around the world. My parents did. They travel every year. So they were supposed to escape this thing, and they didn't.
You've reported on groups like QAnon. You've talked to your parents. They all are forced to live or choose to live in pretty impermeable media bubbles. You say essentially you have to get them to trust you, but how do you do that?
I think you should be poking in their beliefs and providing them with facts that would hopefully get them to doubt their beliefs, but not push it on them.
Well, that really worked well with your dad.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Sorry.
No, you're right. You can just hope it's going to work. I know that from my time, there is nothing anyone could have said or done to change my point of view. So I think what we can do with anyone who has beliefs based on conspiracies is to just keep talking without trying to humiliate them or enrage them, and hope that whenever they have doubts, they're going to come to you with questions and you would have a productive discussion. It's a little bit trickier with Russians now because there is such a moral duty to try to help Ukraine and to get people believe that what is happening is wrong, maybe just because you don't want your family and friends to support the bloodshed. So I think there is the responsibility to have these conversations and hope that something is going to come out of them.
Anastasia, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Anastasia Carrier is an independent journalist who reports on business, politics, misinformation, and online radicalization. That's the show this week. On the Media is produced by Micah Loewinger, Eloise Blondio, Rebecca Clark Callender, Candice Wong, and Suzanne Gaber. This week, Molly Schwartz was the lead producer for the show. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Andrew Nerviano and Adrian Lilly. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.